friends, this is Bears Barroom Radio, and I am Aldo Gandia. Coming up is Lauren Cox of Bears Hour Live and BearsWire.com. I asked Lauren to play GM and produce a 7-round mock draft for the Bears, and he has come up with a really good one. I think you're going to be impressed with the 7 players he will introduce from the podium, and we'll talk a little bit about the strengths and weaknesses of each player. Now, before we get to him, over at BearsBarroom.com, I wanted to point out to you, in case you haven't seen it, that we're starting a series of articles on draft day trade possibilities for the Bears. And the way I'm doing this is I'm taking it team by team. We're not going to do all 31 other teams because a lot of them don't have the capital to make a trade with the Bears. But I am looking at the teams that hold the most draft capital and looking at what the possibilities are of making a deal with that team. The first team that I wrote about is the Cleveland Browns. They hold 11 picks, the most picks of any team in the NFL. And so I presented some scenarios on trading down by sending the Bears a 3rd overall pick. In the event, for instance, the Browns want to pick Myles Garrett with the 1, but don't want to risk losing the quarterback of their choice when they pick again at 12 in the first round, perhaps they would want to move up to the 3rd overall pick with the Bears. And so I presented some scenarios as to what it would take to do a deal like that. And I also presented some scenarios on the Bears trading back into the first round. So, for instance, the Bears have picked somebody like Solomon Thomas with the 3rd overall pick. Now, a quarterback that they like is available at that 12th pick that the Browns have. What would it take for the Bears to move into that pick? So maybe they could pick a Deshaun Kizer or Patrick Mahomes or somebody else that they have their eye on. So that article is already up there, and the next one is going to be on the Tennessee Titans. That will be up on Wednesday. So look for those, please. And then also, if you haven't seen Shane Marsaw's mailback column, please do so. Shane just really hits it out of the park with his insightful and humorous take on all things Chicago Bears. So look at his last column. He refers to somebody as a turd sandwich, and some of you may have seen that already. It was very funny, and also look at why he gets dizzy at the thought of Kyle Long moving positions again. And finally, before we get to Lauren, a word about our draft day coverage. We're going to have something. We're planning on something to provide some instant reaction for you on the picks. And I'm not going to give everything away on this podcast because we're still finalizing some details. But we will be info-packed for you. So make sure that you have it on your list of things to do on draft day. On those 3 draft days is to stop by BearsBarroom.com and take a look at what we're offering you. And it's all free. All right, let's get on with our show. As promised, with me now is Lauren Cox, a man of many hats, including being the mastermind behind BearsHourLive.com, where you can find his podcast of his live radio show and tape analysis of all sorts of players. All of that he does with his cohort, Phil Atoshin, and Lauren is also a writer at BearsWire.com. Lauren, you recently wrote an article on the trade value of the Bears' 3 pick. Now, I'm doing a series at BearsBarroom.com where I look at several teams and mull over the possibilities the Bears might have to trade up or down with those teams. Can you summarize what your piece was about and what conclusion you came up with?
Yeah, so I wanted to look at sort of some of the other trades we've seen in recent years with a top 5 pick and even specifically the 3rd overall pick for a few of them, because, you know, I don't think it's fair to look at some of the moves we've seen, you know, for 1 and 2 for the quarterbacks, you know, move up for Carson Wentz in previous years and Marcus Mariota. And, you know, those tend to be these big hauls as a team sort of mortgages the future of their franchise to get that quarterback. And then that's not probably going to be the situation the Bears are in, especially as it doesn't appear that a quarterback's going to go 1 or 2. It could be 2, but regardless, there's not a consensus top quarterback here. So it was more of a look at some of the other trades when teams, you know, are passionate about a player and move up to get him. So, like, for example, in 2014, when the Bills moved up for Sammy Watkins, they gave up a future first-round pick and a future fourth-round pick to move up, I think, 5 or 6 slots. I think it was from 9 to 3. I think. I don't remember for sure off the top of my head. And, you know, another one, even a smaller move, like the Vikings swapping picks with the Browns back in 2012 just to move up that 1 slot to get Trent Richardson. And so you kind of got this spectrum of, you know, one way or another, Pace can, you know, on the lower end, he could pick up some day three picks and move down a couple slots. Or if he really moves down, if a team, you know, wants a guy like Jamal Adams or Jonathan Allen or even a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, and they, you know, they're on the board at three, you could see him pick up potential future picks, potential early day two picks, and really kind of load up and maybe even stay in the top 10 and still kind of get the best of both worlds of adding picks and still getting an impact playmaker in the first round.
And one of the things I'm doing with my series is I'm talking about the possibility of getting back into the first round after making that third overall pick. Have you given that any thought? And is that something that you would find appealing, sacrificing some draft picks in order to get back maybe into the top 15 to target one of those top quarterbacks?
You know, I go back and forth on that because, you know, Draft Dr. Phil has been selling me on this idea recently that if there's a quarterback that you like in this draft, you just take him with a third overall pick and you don't even have to worry about it. If you think this guy can be a difference maker for your franchise and can be your quarterback for the next 10 years, then why risk waiting and letting another team go up? Because you never know, even if you just trade it down in the first round, you never know if some other team's going to move up and get the guy that you wanted. If you really feel conviction on one of these quarterbacks as a guy that we need him to be the face of our franchise, then just take him at the third overall pick. I like the idea of trading up in the second round, even back in the bottom of the first, to get a prospect that they feel like they can't miss, especially when you have that extra fourth round pick already. I don't think it's critical, and I don't think I think they can afford to move back up. But if it's to get a quarterback, I would just prefer they take a guy at third overall, even if it's like Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Kaiser, some of these guys that aren't mocked as much in the top five and aren't maybe nationally seen as quote unquote worthy of top five picks. If you're Ryan Pace and you're drafting a quarterback in the first round, no matter where you draft him, you are saying that he is the future of our team. So just secure him at the third pick and make sure that you get him.
Good stuff. Now, before we get to your mock draft, one more question. Did you open up a new can of Nutella when you heard that Tracy Porter was released?
You know, it's something we've been looking at a long time, but you know, I don't want to celebrate too much because, you know, at the very least, Tracy Porter seems like a good dude. I think he won the Bears Good Guy Media Award or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he, as much as he took plays off and didn't seem to want to get physical down the end of the year, he was, you know, I don't wish any ill will towards him, and I hope he sticks on somewhere because he's been battling through knee injuries, and he's not a guy that necessarily completely gave up even when he did give up sometimes on the field. So there wasn't too much celebrating, but it was more of a told you so kind of moment.
Well, and I've come to his defense a number of times thinking that one of the reasons he gave up was just because he was protecting himself because he was playing hurt. And the Bears just didn't have faith in any of the young guys to replace him. But
It does seem strange that they do it now.
Yeah.
You know, on April 10th. But yeah. It almost is disrespectful to him. Like, why not cut him earlier? I mean, I get maybe waiting until you've signed a couple of corners so you know you're set at the position. But they added B.W. Webb a couple of days ago. But it was B.W. Webb, the straw that broke the camel's back, that said, okay, now let's cut Tracy Porter. You know, it feels weird that they did it now. Either wait until maybe after the draft or do it earlier in free agency to give a veteran that was a respected person on the team the opportunity to go sign somewhere before the free agent market has sort of dried up.
Well, maybe they looked at their board and said, we're definitely going to walk out of here with a cornerback that we have some promise in. And in fact, you've got one on your mock draft that we'll talk about shortly. But first, we're going to start with your first round draft pick. And the card is in. Who is it, Mr. Lauren Cox?
With the third pick in the 2017 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select Jonathan Allen, defensive lineman, Alabama.
Now tell me who you bypassed to select Allen.
Well, you know, I think part of it was I knew that a guy like Draft Dr. Phil was going to take Deshaun Watson in his mock draft, and I wanted to mix it up because I would absolutely take Deshaun Watson as the number one choice here. But I went with Jonathan Allen here because, A, I still think there's a possibility that Deshaun Watson could go off the board before the Bears pick, and B, I think Allen is kind of getting overlooked and maybe even overthought in the draft process here. You know, he's been that consensus top defensive lineman since probably before the college regular season started. I mean, he's been that good. Everyone knows Jonathan Allen, Alabama, there's your top defensive lineman in the draft. He almost didn't need to play this season to reveal that. But, you know, it's easy to get excited about some of the other guys there. You know, the Solomon Thomas was kind of a more of an unknown guy early in the draft process, at least in the mainstream, as you know, the national analysts hadn't gotten to his tape at Stanford. Everyone had already watched Jonathan Allen. He was a lock of a top five pick in every mock draft through January, February, and even March. But now you're starting to see him go down in the 10, the 15 range even. And I don't, I just think that's overanalysis of maybe overanalysis of everyone else around him, but he's just such a lockdown, sure thing, 10-year starter, Pro Bowl player. You know he's going to come in. He can pass rush on the defensive line. He can hold double teams. He doesn't get moved off his spot much. He's very, very technically sound. He's strong. He's not as explosive as a Solomon Thomas, but he's, you know, obviously a bigger person, and you don't necessarily need that. I mean, the explosiveness is nice, and it's a nice ceiling thing, but when he's so sound and so strong, his pad level's great, his hand usage is great, his feet always know where they're going, and he's just not a guy that, even against double teams, he can hold his own and even shed and split and go and make plays in the backfield. He just does everything so well, and it's easy to take that for granted when he's not quite as flashy or as exciting as a Marshon Lattimore, as a Malik Hooker, as these other guys that keep getting in that conversation for the third overall pick as Jonathan Allen kind of drops down. And I'm not concerned at all about the arthritic condition in the shoulder. I mean, I don't want to say not at all, but I don't feel like that's a thing that's going to be – it's not going to affect him in the first 5-plus years of his career. It sounds like that would only be more of a long-term thing. And at the third overall pick, I would take the sure thing for the first 5 years of his career and probably a sure thing for his entire career over a guy, you know, another, like a Malik Hooker that you're – maybe he's pretty darn sure, but you're not – as 100% set on, like, this guy is going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, he had a great senior season at Alabama, 69 tackles, 16 for loss, 10.5 sacks. He won all sorts of awards and honors, including unanimous All-American and first All-SEC honors. One draft service, I think it's Rob Brang over at NFLDraftScout.com, compared him to Michael Bennett, saying he can wreak havoc lining up inside and outside like Bennett and demolishing blockers. He did point out that he has inadequate length to be a true edge player, and he tends to play upright and needs to protect his lower body from cuts, and he's not a very creative pass rusher. You pretty much agree with those negative comments from Rob Rang over at NFLDraftScout.com?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not – I mean, he's just too big and not long enough, like too big, too heavy, a little bit too slow to be a true edge player. I know Alabama kind of used him literally up and down the entire defensive line from the nine tech to the nose tech – to the nose tackle, excuse me. But, you know, you're going to put him at the five technique in Chicago. You're going to move him inside in nickel. He can really play up and down the line. And, yeah, I would agree. I mean, he's not necessarily I don't know if saying he's not creative of a pass rusher is too negative, because it's not as though you see a lot of defensive linemen that string together counter moves and you know, rip, swim, spin and back and forth. But I think you know, when you say he's not creative enough, it gives people the idea that he's not good, and he's got good go-to moves, and I think he's got enough that he'll be fine, and maybe he's not. And that's an area where he can continue to improve, and I think that's where you see his ceiling. I know people talk a lot about him not having a high ceiling, and he does have a very high floor, but I think adding even more creativity in the pass rush is something that he can get better at. And I think defensive linemen can always get better at, you know, breaking down blocks and finishing in space. But he's a guy that had 10.5 sacks last year and 12 sacks the year before. So it's not like pass rushing has ever been an issue. I think people hear big defensive linemen and think he's just a big run stuffer, but he can really do a lot. And he's not slow by any means. I don't know if you remember that sack where he leaped over the running back that dove to the ground and tackled the quarterback all in the same motion. I mean, he can move even if his combine wasn't, you know, electric compared to a lot of the other guys. But I think it's easy to kind of get caught up in him being bigger and stronger and sort of less explosive than some of the other prospects, when everything he does so well is just, you just can't pass up that kind of opportunity.
So who's the front, there's a starting three in game one at Soldier Field, hopefully, for the 2017 season?
I mean, I don't know how you block having Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman, and Jonathan Allen in that base defense, especially with Leonard Floyd and Pernell McPhee on the outside. I mean, you send those five against five offensive linemen, one of them is going to win almost every down, it seems like. And then you get in the nickel, and a guy like Allen can be in there with Goldman, or you can put Allen and Hicks. I mean, you can really rotate so much more. And even with Jonathan Bullard in the situation, I mean, last year Akeem Hicks played, I think, the third or fourth most snaps of any 3-4 defensive end in the league. That's the kind of thing that, you know, he's in his prime, but you don't want to overuse him like that. And so even adding a guy like Allen can get Hicks fewer snaps as you get Bullard in there, as you get Mitch Unrein if he's still around. I mean, it gives you a lot of opportunities to get players involved.
All right, the chimes have rung. Who is up next in the second round?
With the 36th overall pick in the 2017 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select Kevin King, defensive back, Washington.
Now, this kid is a special athlete. He's, 6'3", 215 pounds or so. Tell me why you like him so much.
Yeah, he's one of these guys that could easily go at the bottom of the first round. There's, you know, a handful of corners and safeties that in this class where the NFL teams are going to rank them out differently, and some of them might see them as late first-round picks. Others might be willing to wait till this end. So there's always a decent chance that Kevin King doesn't last this long. I know Bears bottoms Jose Cotto has been a huge proponent of him for a long time now, but it's really easy to get excited about, you know, like you mentioned, Kevin King's size, 6'3", 200 pounds. He ran a 4.43 at the combine, and he can really just – he's sort of like a better DeAndre Hall in that sense. I mean, even for a guy his size, he's got great range and he's got great speed to be able to keep up with guys. He's got such a long frame that he can keep up receivers even when he goes up against someone smaller and faster than him. He's got good hands. He made a really nice one-handed interception against Arizona State that I know Jose always likes to bring up. You know, he only had two interceptions this past year, but that's, to me, it's not a huge concern. He had 15 pass breakups. I mean, the actual interceptions themselves, it's more about being able to take advantage of opportunities. And I think a lot of luck goes into some interceptions, and sometimes balls just happen to fall in your hand. But the fact that he was able to consistently make plays on passes, whether or not they were picked off or not, to me shows that he has ball skills and he has the ability to attack the ball in the air when he's being targeted. And so, you know, some people see him as a potential safety at the next level, and I think you could consider that down the line. But the Bears seem to want to move DeAndre Hall to safety, and they've talked about Kyle Fuller to safety. And I think King is a guy that you start out at cornerback, and if you feel like you have the need at safety, maybe sometime down the line you could move him there. But I think he's fine on the outside, and I'd be really excited about having him in. Even with a guy like Prince Mukamara and Marcus Cooper already on the roster, you need to add more young bodies at the position. And I think he's a guy that physically would get this defensive coaching staff excited.
Now, one of the things I read, again, over at NFLDraftScout.com, is that King's size is a quality and a curse. He can shrink the passing lanes, but sometimes he's vulnerable to really good route runners because of his size. Did you detect any of that?
At times, he's a guy that does tend to get a little uptight, and he can get a little bit, you know, he's not as fluid of an athlete as some of these other cornerbacks, and there's some grabbing. And another thing, too, I'd like to see him be a little bit more of a solid tackler. It's not that he's bad, but sometimes he likes to just kind of throw himself around, and because he's so long, he'll just try and length it rather than actually like squaring up and getting good form. You know, again, there is maybe some speed questions, but with his size, I think he's so good at being able to keep up with receivers, and I hope that there aren't any, you know, long-term durability issues. He played through the entire season last year, 14 full games, and you know, he's a little bit wiry at that size, but it's a solid combination, and I think he's fast enough and big enough that they sort of any size deficiency is made up with his speed, and any speed deficiency is made up with his size. And I struggle to get too concerned about any one area of his weaknesses.
Yeah, one of the things that was mentioned is that he does tend to rip at the ball too much, which leads to some missed tackles. And Ian Wharton, who was a guest on this show a week ago, doesn't have him quite as high as you and Jose do, and pointed out some of his weaknesses as saying that his run defense presence is mediocre. He didn't really look good on man-on-man coverage and is better suited for a zone defense, not as effective in press. So he detected perhaps some more weaknesses than you guys did, but he also did point out his strengths, as you have, that he's got that rare length and highly competitive on jump balls. He has a great chance of disrupting the pass at the catch point. So there's some really intriguing aspects about this guy's abilities. So do you expect a guy like Kevin King to come in and compete right away for a starting job?
Yeah, I definitely think he would be in the competition. It's not that he's going to step in day one and really lock it down, but I think he's just so intriguing athletically that if he can get in and sort of, you know, refine and sort of find some more consistency with an NFL coaching staff. I mean, he like you said, he makes plays, but there are other times where there's a little bit of a breaking down. And so the ceiling is what gets you so excited with him. But, you know, maybe he would need a year to work in the bench a little bit and, you know, rotate in and nickel and dime situations. But I think he would be in the conversation. And with guys like Amukamara and Marcus Cooper, they're not necessarily sure things on the outside. And I think he could be at least in the competition, not that he would necessarily lock it down from the beginning.
And that's exactly what Ian says in his concluding thoughts, is that he's got lots of upside and is definitely worthy of a developmental pick. Okay, we're on to round three, and Lauren is at the podium.
In the third round, I would have the Bears taking Antonio Garcia, the offensive tackle from Troy. He's another guy, too, that you never know. He could be a second-round pick of teams like him in this tackle class, or he could slide down and be more of a fourth-round guy. I mean, this tackle class isn't necessarily deep, and it could be sort of a flavor thing for teams if they like a guy that's a little bit more athletic and can move well, but maybe needs to bulk up a little bit and add some strength, or if they like a guy that's stronger and can really lock down as a run blocker and take on power rushers, but needs to be able to move a little bit better at the next level. But a guy like Antonio Garcia is real easy for me to get excited about, because I think he, even in the third round, assuming he's there, he could step in and compete right away at left tackle and compete with a Charles Leno. Not necessarily going to knock Leno off, especially if he can continue to develop. We've kind of seen slow but steady improvement from Leno, and if that continues, he might not be able to unseat a guy like Leno in year one, but there is a lot to like from a guy like Antonio Garcia. I know at Troy, he kind of gets overlooked a little bit, especially with, you know, Wisconsin and Alabama prospects more at the top of this class. But Garcia's a guy that's just, you know, he's big, 6'2", 302 pounds. He's got a really nice punch. He moves pretty well for that size. He's a flexible guy. He has sort of that mean streak, too, when he gets on the edge as a run blocker. And, you know, maybe sometimes he's one of those guys that could use a little bit of bulk, even at his size, and he could use a little bit more strength. But, you know, you like the traits that he has. It's kind of like King, where you're so intrigued by him physically and some of the flashes that he's made that you're willing to put up with some of the inconsistencies that he has, and hope that, you know, working in an NFL coaching staff and working with this team will, you know, make sure he's correct and on the same page mentally, and knowing exactly where his feet and his hands need to be at all times. And certainly he's shown plenty of snaps that get you really excited about him as a tackle prospect. But there's a reason he's a third round guy and not a first round guy. You know, he's going to need maybe a little bit of time. But again, like King, in that conversation for day one, but might not unseat just because they do have some talent at the position.
Yeah, some of the things that I've learned about him is that at that size, 6'6", and almost 300 pounds, he still has a lot of room in his frame to add more muscle. Another really interesting stat, even given the fact that he played at Troy and the level of competition wasn't top-notch, but he started 6 games as a freshman and another 37, and during that span gave up only 5.5 sacks. That's very impressive. He did benefit from an offense that got the ball out quickly and can get lazy with his footwork. That, again, according to Rob Rang over at NFLDraftScout.com. But, boy, I really like this pick. And if he's available there to start the third round, I agree with you. The Bears should snatch this kid. He's got some potential to him.
Yeah, a lot of offensive tackle play starts with the feet, and I really like that about Garcia. I mean, he's a guy that can really move well for his size, at least. Maybe not. And when you say move well, it's not that he's an elite athlete at the position, but he just moves very smoothly and it's very controlled. And I think that is what keeps me coming back to him as a prospect over and over. It's like a lot of times, you know, if you see an offensive lineman that kind of needs to be reworked with a coaching staff, it starts with those feet, and it's like, okay, his feet are everywhere, and then we'll work back up to the arms and the waist and getting everything where it needs to be into the hands. But I love Garcia's feet, and I think that's the kind of thing that is that framework that keeps me excited about him as a third-round guy, that he's not a total, you know, he's not a total project, a rebuild. Maybe a guy like Cam and Robinson from Alabama, who you're really intrigued with physically, but there's a lot of inconsistencies there. He's a waistbender and can kind of get beat. But a guy like Garcia, it seems like if he can just add some weight, which tends to happen at the NFL, and he can, you know, show up his hands a little bit here and there, he needs some refinement. There's a solid left tackle prospect for the future that kind of gets you excited for the backside or the blind side for Mike Glennon or whoever's under center.
I got to tell you, when you sent me these picks, I did the research, and I was really impressed with these next three guys, starting with who you've selected with the fourth round. Again, Lauren is at the podium.
Yeah, I had to do a little bit of a. I'm not a Wisconsin homer because I go there, but maybe you can call it a bias because I'm a big fan of this prospect. The first pick in the fourth round, I have the Wisconsin Badgers. I have the Bears taking the outside linebacker Vince Beagle. He's a guy that not gonna be your most physically dominant in any way. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he plays like one of my friends, Owen Reese, who writes for Bucky's Fifth Quarter and a couple. He does his own draft work too. He describes him as like a chicken with his head cut off on the field at all times. He's always running around. His motor is nonstop, and I know that gets thrown around a lot with a lot of players. But he is a guy that, I mean, he will not quit on any single play, and he's a really good human being. I've talked to him many times. All of his teammates love him. His coaching staff loves him. He really just. He doesn't rub people the wrong way in any shape or form. It's rare. I don't usually have that kind of perspective on a draft prospect, but I know what I've seen from Vince Beagle. He's a guy that he can set the edge very firm. He's not going to be bigger and then stronger than every offensive tackle he goes against, but he knows so well how to get his leverage and just get low, get his hand up underneath the chest plate of the blocker and get under and hold on that edge. And as a pass rusher, he's got a lot of pass rush moves. He's a little bit more creative of a guy, and he can line up sort of a little bit everywhere. The last year when Dave Aranda was the Wisconsin defensive coordinator, they would move him around. He'd play, you know, 4-high technique defensive lineman, 6-technique defensive lineman. He'd move to the outside linebacker, move to the inside. They'd stunt and loop him around. They found a lot of different ways to get this guy opportunities to rush the passer, and he seemed to be able to impress everyone. And, you know, this past year he had a foot injury, and he kind of was – his production on the whole was limited. I think that's really dropped his draft stock, because after last year he was kind of looking like the next – big thing at the pass rushing, at least coming out of Wisconsin, and TJ Watt kind of overshadowed him this year, but he's just so solid, and when you see his sack numbers from this year, maybe it's easy to get a little bit discouraged, but he is just more of a sure thing as a prospect, maybe a little bit limited ceiling physically just because he's not, and he does have room to add some weight, but he's not the biggest or the longest or the fastest guy, but you know what you're getting with him. You're getting a solid pass rusher who can set the edge versus the run and make plays in the backfield.
And a guy that plays with tons of passion and intensity. I was looking at some of the highlights of that have been compiled of him. And this guy, from the minute he's on the field to the final whistle, he is whooping and hollering and really intensely into the game. I was really impressed with his highlight reel.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to be around. You can tell his teammates really vibe off of him. And like I said, he's just a good human being. You couldn't find people around here that have anything bad to say about him. Even outside of football context, I know people that, you know him as a friend, as a personal friend, and he just treats everyone right. You know exactly what you're getting, and he's just a solid football player.
One of the concerns about him that I read and Ian Wharton talked about in his draft guide is whether he can have the ability to cover tight ends. It's something that I guess he didn't do much of at Wisconsin, and so there's certain questions as to whether he can do that at the next level, and if he can't, then they might have to hide that deficiency from him. You saw every play of him at Wisconsin. Did you notice anything about his coverage skills that you can share with us here?
Yeah, he's not a guy that you're going to want to line up, you know, one-on-one with the tight ends, the athletic tight ends of today's NFL. But I don't see that as that big of an issue, especially in the Bears scheme. I mean, I wouldn't say that about Pernell McPhee or Willie Young or Lamar Houston. I mean, he's kind of in that sort of mold where you can drop him back into his zone, you know, over the middle or in the flat, and he'll be fine. He's not uncomfortable in space, and he's made some plays on the ball. I don't think he has any career interceptions, but he can, you know, break up passes, and he's not like lost and unsure of what he's doing out there, but he's not athletically gifted enough to be able to cover some of these guys. And I mean, I just don't think I would ask him to cover a lot of man-on-man coverage. He can do it, but it's not something you're going to want to have to rely on, and that's not that big of a concern for me.
I'll tell you, I was impressed by his tape, and he looks like the kind of guy that you want in your locker room, you want on your roster. He may not be a superstar, but he's a piece towards getting to a winning record. So good find there. Now let's go to the fourth round. This would be actually your second pick in the fourth round, and he is who?
With the second fourth-round pick, I have them taking wide receiver Kenny Golladay. I would assume it's pronounced Golladay, from Northern Illinois, a local kid. You know, he was a guy that wasn't even recruited out of high school. He didn't get any FBS levels, and he went to to North Dakota and played there for a couple years before ending up at Northern Illinois. And he's just another one of these sort of physical freaks. He's a 6'4", 218-pound guy. And I kind of see him as the replacement for Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, he's been over 1,000 yards the past two seasons with 18 touchdowns at Northern Illinois, and he's been played in pretty much every game. Big frame, great hands catcher, can go up and grab the ball when you throw it up to him. And, you know, he actually moves pretty well for a guy that size and seems to have a knack for being able to sort of make those last-minute adjustments in the air and control his body. And obviously he's a guy that's a high-effort player, not only as a receiver, but he's a willing blocker, even if he's not necessarily great at it. I mean, he is 218 pounds, but he's not a bulky 218 pounds. He's a very lean because he's 6'4", but he's a willing blocker, and that's the baseline that you take to be able to build him into at least a serviceable one in the NFL. But like I said, he's a little bit lean and lanky at his size, and a little bit more straight line than explosive, because he's that size. He's not a guy that can, you know, run out of the slot by any means. And he can, and part of the concern with that too is that he can be bumped off his route a little bit, and especially against press coverage, if he doesn't break it effectively, he can kind of get jammed even for a guy his size. But it's not to me, another guy, you get him in the weight room and you bulk him up, and then all of a sudden you've got your big 6'4" wide receiver that you lost in Alshon Jeffrey and that Mike Glennon loved to throw to with Vincent Jackson in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, you mentioned that he went to North Dakota for his first 2 years, and I read that in his first 2 years there, he caught 99 passes for 1,313 yards and 9 touchdowns. And during that period, he grew from 6 feet tall to 6'4". So I can see perhaps why he wasn't highly recruited out of high school. He went through this transformation and as a 19 and 20-year-old or 18, 19-year-old, and has really produced an NFL-ready body. And one of the other things that I read, and you talked a little bit about this, is NFLDraftScout.com again wrote that long receivers sometimes struggle with explosiveness, but not this kid. Now, you detected a little bit of lack of explosion, but this particular scout thought that he was very explosive. And the one thing that he was concerned about was that his hands sometimes proved to be less than perfect on long passes, that he tended to have some trouble with passes over his shoulder and so forth, but that these were things that were all easily coachable, and that this kid really has potential to be an NFL starter. I like him.
Yeah, when I say explosiveness issues, it's not, I think he's explosive in a straight line sense. He can go decently from 0 to 60 for his size. Mm-hmm. But I think where he lacks that is sort of laterally and being able to work, you know, once he's got the ball in his hands, making plays after the catch. I don't see as much explosiveness. And I don't agree necessarily with the deep ball concerns. I think he does a decent job of catching it over the shoulder, but that's not to say that, you know, he didn't drop some passes there. And then there's always, I think every receiver can improve their hands. I don't know if there's anyone that would say that they're good enough there. So I'll allow that.
Okay. All right, we're moving on to the fifth round. Another guy, frankly, I had not heard much of until I saw him on your mock draft and did some research into him and saw some tape yesterday. Very impressive. Tell our audience who you selected in the fifth round.
Yeah, in the fifth round, I've got tight end Michael Roberts from Toledo. He's a guy that I got to see up close and personal at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, he might not be as explosive as, you know, you want. He's 6'4", 270, and you kind of want him. When you look at him, you want him to be this athletic tight end freak, and he's just not quite there yet. I think he ran like a 4.86 at the combine, and he's not a burner by any means with a straight line speed, but he's a very reliable pass catcher. I think at Pro Football Focus had him with like 3 drops last year out of like 60-something targets, and he's just a very, very strong run blocker. And he's not, I wouldn't call him the best blocker in this class, but he's very solid, and I think he's a great pass protector as well, a little bit better of a run blocker than pass blocker, but he's strong. He can drive defenders back. He ran a lot of different kind of routes as a receiver, even if he's not a burner. He's not going to necessarily, you know, take the top off by any means, but he caught 16 touchdowns this last year for a reason. It's because he can go around and he's got good hands. You know, he's your perfect number two tight end, I think, on this team. And I know they signed Deion Sims and they've got Zach Miller already on the roster, but you want a guy that can be a very, very reliable blocker, and he's got great hands. And I'll live with the lack of athleticism. You can throw the athleticism in Zach Miller and you can get athletic tight ends, and you can have receivers do other things, but you know Roberts is going to catch the ball when you throw it to him, and you know if you need him to block for you, he's going to do a solid job. And in the fifth round, you know, that's a perfect role for him.
Now, you mentioned his hands. The size of his hands are 11 and 5/8 inches. So this guy's got hands the size of my car. but I will say this. When I was looking at the highlight reel yesterday, and this kid, yes, he caught basically everything thrown his way. But it did seem like he held his hands close to his body a number of times, and he would trap the ball to his body. So sometimes I was concerned a little bit that his hands weren't totally defect free, to put it a certain way. But nonetheless, this guy, as you mentioned, was highly productive. He caught, he basically was a 1 year starter. He caught 45 catches last year, 533 yards, 10 catches in the end zone, all for, I mean, 10 throws in the end zone, caught them all for touchdowns. Had over 80% of his career catches go for first downs, and this season saw 35% of his catches go for touchdowns. As you mentioned, 16 total touchdowns. Really, really impressive. And also very impressive when you look back at his family history. The young man was suspended from elementary school a number of times. It was discovered that he had a speech impediment, and this is according to NFL.com, and he also had an attention deficit disorder. Once that was under control, he did very well in school and didn't have great grades, but he did well. He lost his grandma to cancer and his younger brother to an accidental shooting, so he's overcome a number of personal obstacles to go on to Toledo, and now he's going to work his way onto an NFL team because this guy's tape looks really, really impressive. His size, he almost reminds me a little bit of Martellus Bennett. This is a really good find on your part, Lauren. I really like this guy.
Yeah, and I think – I mean, I understand the Martellus Bennett comp, especially in the way he looks and the way he moves, but he's not – and I'm not saying you were saying this, but he's not – because he's not as athletic as Martellus Bennett, mm-hmm. I think that's what's going to allow him to drop to day three, that some of these other tight ends in this deep class are going to intrigue teams and kind of slowly push him down, even though he's sort of the more – maybe he's more refined and more solid of a prospect – in blocking and even just pass catching, but he's not a guy that's going to make a ton of plays after the catch. Mm-hmm. He's going to get the ball for you, but he's not going to break a bunch of tackles or make any big time plays downfield. And that's going to leave him on the board right around this range in the fifth round when I would take him.
Yeah. Bennett was like, if I recall correctly, a second round pick for the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. So he certainly doesn't come with the pedigree that Bennett came out of, but yeah, he does look a little bit like Martellus Bennett and maybe could develop into that type of player with some good coaching and some good luck. Now, we're going to go to the seventh round. The Bears, of course, don't have a sixth-round pick, and I've noticed that you have not selected a quarterback because your man Deshaun Watson was selected prior to your first pick in the first round. So in the seventh round, could Lauren possibly find a quarterback? Let's go to the podium and find out.
Yeah, you know, in the seventh round, I have the Bears taking quarterback Mr. Joshua Dobbs from Tennessee. And he's a guy that there's a decent chance that he's not on the board in the seventh round. But again, you never really know, especially with this quarterback class where opinions are so split at the top of the group. I can only imagine how split they're going to be at the bottom. I mean, you could see a guy like Dobbs go as early as like the third or the fourth round. You could see him last the seventh. And you can say the same thing about, you know, guys like Nate Peterman even and Brad Kaya and Davis Webb. These are all, you know, some people are going to see them as early day three, late day two picks, and some people are going to see them as much farther down, and they'd rather take a guy like Chad Kelly or Jerod Evans, some of these other prospects that could be more intriguing. So, you know, there's a decent chance that he's not there in the seventh round, and there's a chance he could go undrafted. So I threw him there because I feel like if you're going to take a chance on a late round quarterback, I mean, you're not expecting this guy to turn into a starter by any means. So if I'm going to take a chance on a guy, I want the one that does, I want to say, was it astrophysics was his major in college? He's essentially, I think he graduated a year early too. He's pretty well known as a genius, at least book smart wise. And I think, you know, I think he still needs to figure some things out on the field because he's highly intelligent. But, you know, football intelligence is very different from book intelligence, from street or from, you know, from school smarts. But I think if I'm going to take a chance on a guy, give me the guy that's a genius that can pick up astrophysics, and I think I should have a pretty good time getting him to improve at the football field, because at least I know what he can. I know he's got the mind. I know he's got it up top, and he's got it right between the ears. And I think we can work the rest out if I trust my coaching staff.
Yeah, I was thinking about this analogy earlier today when I was thinking about Dobbs, is that hopefully he's not the kind of guy. You ever hear of these guys that have a black belt in karate, and then as soon as there's some, you know, somebody wants to pick a fight with the guy, you know, the black belt guy runs out of the bar as faster than anybody else. And that, you know, he's got the skills, he's got the knowledge of what to do, but when the chips are down, he just doesn't come through. Now, his numbers did look good. His first full year as a starter, which was 2015, he threw for over 2,200 yards, 15 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions, while he rushed for 671 yards and 11 touchdowns. Then last season, he threw for almost 3,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, had 831 rushing yards, 12 touchdowns. So he's very productive, but you're right, you know, in that he is a little bit erratic with his accuracy. He leaves the pocket early. He's got a lot to learn. He does strike me, though, if he's available there in the seventh round, he strikes me as a worthy investment of a developmental quarterback just because of his smarts and his physical skills. I like the pick.
Yeah, he's got an arm. You know, it's not a cannon, but it's an NFL arm, and he's got the legs. Again, maybe not the fastest quarterback in the draft, but he's mobile and can make plays on the ground. And like you said, he had a lot of he was inaccurate at times. He had trouble reading coverages, and he had too many turnovers. But I'll take my chances in the seventh round on a guy with physical tools and mental tools, and try and work out the rest, and at least see what I can get out of him. Because if anyone's gonna turn a seventh round, if anyone's gonna be a seventh round pick that turns into something more, I'll take the astrophysicist.
Really, now I got a question for you regarding drafting quarterbacks. I'm starting to question whether it really is necessary to draft a quarterback every year, particularly if you haven't chosen one in the first few rounds, which is normally where you would find a quarterback with starter potential. After the first three rounds, you're typically looking at quarterbacks that are second string quarterbacks or quarterbacks that you're going to draft as a developmental quarterback. But sometimes I wonder, I mean, I look at this year's draft of quarterbacks outside of the first four quarterbacks, who I think all have starter potential in the NFL, then there's a long list of developmental quarterbacks. I wouldn't even say a long list of developmental quarterbacks. I'd say a list of developmental quarterbacks and then a really long list of guys that I wouldn't even touch. Now, Dobbs is one that I would, but there's let me pull up my list here of quarterbacks. But, oh, for instance, Nathan Peterman. I wouldn't draft Nathan Peterman. Now, you got a great look at him at the Senior Bowl. Would you draft Nathan Peterman?
No, I think you make a good point there about, you know, the value of drafting a quarterback every year. Not in Peterman was pretty poor at the Senior Bowl, but I didn't watch a ton of him. I mean, really, I mean, you can only watch so many prospects at one time each day. Sure. So I didn't necessarily watch him every day, but from the little that I did see, I was very much not impressed. And I think when you're looking at drafting quarterbacks in the late rounds, or at least after the first couple of days, when you're looking at day three, to me, you have to find someone that gives you a chance at something great. You kind of have to swing for the fence a little bit more, because there's no need to draft a guy on day three that you feel like is going to be a great backup, because you can go and find great backups somewhere else. But you look, so like, to me, I want to take a guy that is elite in some category, does something really, really well. And I don't know what it is that Nathan Peterman is elite at. You know, his arm is good, but not great. And I think he sees the field pretty well, but not elite. And his footwork is okay, but not great. And his accuracy is okay. He's just sort of this really all-around kind of average guy that, to me, a career backup. And I would rather just sign a veteran have an experienced player there than draft him. And I'd rather take a guy like a Joshua Dobbs who's got an elite mental, you know, who's just a really, really smart guy, or go after a guy like Chad Kelly even, who has a cannon of an arm and has made some really, really flashy plays that could get you excited, that if somehow you could clean up the footwork and clean up the off-the-field stuff, that maybe a guy like Chad Kelly could turn into a starting-level quarterback sometime down the line. But a guy like Peterman, and even a Brad Kaya, they don't get me excited as being more than just a backup. And I think back to like other, you know, day three quarterbacks that have become greater things. A guy like Dak Prescott was, I think it got overlooked at the time, but he was elite accurate in college. He was a guy that when we went back through for Pro Football Focus and charted his 2015 year in college, he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks as far as ball placement. So not just completion percentage, but where on the receiver he's putting the ball every single time. And that got overlooked in the draft process. And same thing with a guy like Kirk Cousins. I think he's a guy that you like the arm, you like his ability to see the defense, and he was one that was able to grow and sort of and become more. But you don't, you know, is Kirk Cousins your, you know, is a team like Washington 100% confident in Kirk Cousins because, you know, they're interested in sending him to San Francisco? There's some question marks that he's kind of more in that Brad Kaya, Nate Peterman range where you can get something more out of them. But I don't know. It just doesn't get you excited. You know, you don't get excited about Kirk Cousins as a quarterback. You get more excited about the Dak Prescotts of the world, the Tyrod Taylors of the world that can go on and be something greater. And it's not usually going to work out, but at least when you take someone that's elite in some area, it gives you more hope and more of a chance to get something that can excite you.
I hear you. Good analysis. Here's another quarterback I would not touch. C.J. Beathard from Iowa. Wouldn't touch him. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just not going to touch him.
Does he do well?
I'm sorry?
He's big and white.
That's right.
I said, what does he do well?
Yeah, I can't find it. You know, I'd rather take my chances at drafting an athlete that I can possibly get some use out of in special teams. You know, you can find gems as undrafted free agents who play the running back position, who can give you a bunch of good downs as a third down specialist or whatever. But I just would not draft a quarterback who is just going to take up space and eat all the candy bars in the quarterback room. I'm just not going to do it. All right. Before I let you go, I know you got tons of stuff to do, but there were two or three questions that we got sent to from our Twitter followers. One of them, actually two of them, from our mailman, Shane Marsaw. Let me begin with Josh Cushman. I think he asked a really good question. Why is drafting a safety in the top five such taboo? A guy that can be an upgrade as a starter day one shouldn't matter, in my opinion. If you knew Ed Reed caliber, why not? So I'll ask you that question. Why not? Why is it drafting a safety has always been a taboo in the NFL?
I think there's a couple things with this class specifically that have led to that being more taboo this year. I mean, it seems to be that way every year, but for the most part, there just aren't these elite safety prospects in every draft. A lot of drafts, you're seeing teams get more desperate for safety and actually reach for some guys that maybe they shouldn't have. Class, you've got two guys that belong in the top 10 with Jamal Adams and Malik Hooker, and I think two things ended up happening with them is, one, I think Jamal Adams started to be, like I said with Jonathan Allen, a little bit of the over and analysis of, you know, he's kind of been in this conversation as the top safety in the draft for a very long time. And so you start to nitpick and you start to get more excited about the Buda Bakers and the Obi Melifonwus. And all of a sudden, Jamal Adams goes from being a sure thing top five pick to dropping into that 10, 15 range, maybe not quite 15 range, but, you know, dropping in people's mock drafts because he's getting stale in sort of the conversation. I think it's easy to forget, again, how solid he is. They're very close to a sure thing at the strong safety position. I think people to start to think that he can't play the deep end and he can't play some free safety. And maybe in some teams where they have very defined free safety and strong safety roles, you're not going to want him to be that single deep guy in the back end that much. When you look at a team like the Bears, where Vic Fangio likes to be able to have both safeties do a little bit of everything so he can disguise coverages, he can have the guy drop down. I think Adams, even with his 40 time not being quite what you wanted, I think he has enough range to be able to play the back end. He's threatening enough as a hitter that if he's coming from you from the hash on a deep ball, he's going to get in your mind a little bit after you've taken that first hit from him. And I think even if he's not as elite of an athlete as Malik Hooker, I think he can do it just fine. And like we talked about with Hooker, he's got some tackling issues, but he's such a rangy freak. And I think he's got more of the Ed Reed comparison there that you'd absolutely get excited about him being able to make plays on your back end. But the other thing I think that's happening with this class is because you've got the Obi Melifonwus, the Buda Bakers, the even Kevin King for some people as a safety, there are a lot of those late first, second round safeties in this draft that get people excited, that, you know, to say, well, let's not take a safety top five because we can get one of these guys later. And I understand that in a sense. But at the same time, if you see Jamal Adams or Malik Hooker as a can't-miss prospect that is going to be an instant upgrade for your defense, I don't understand passing on that. If you see him as the best player available on the board, just for the opportunity to take a lesser player at the position in the third or in the second round, taking a chance that those guys would even be there, even trading up to do so when you could have just stayed at, you know, you could have just used a third pick at that position and get a guy that you know for sure is going to be a playmaker in a secondary that this team has been lacking for a long time?
That's a good response to Josh Cushman, and I'll just add that there are certain things in the NFL that they're quick to adapt to and certain things that they are slow to adapt to, and I think that this has just been one of those things. The game of football has changed in the last few years, and the safety position has become more and more important. I think that taboo of drafting safeties higher up, particularly if their talent is warranted, I think that's going to go away. I think it's slowly going away, and I think this year might be the year where we'll see some dramatic changes there. Now, Shane sent a couple of questions. The first one is, sell me on Nathan Peterman. Go. I will refer him to, I will refer him to a segment earlier in the show. And then he asked, what concerns you more, Jonathan Allen's shoulder, Malik Hooker's hip, Marshawn Lattimore's hamstrings, or Aldo's gun cabinet?
So number one is definitely going to be the gun cabinet, because Aldo Gandhi has a pair of attractive daughters, I believe one step, that he refuses to connect with me, who just happens to be the same age. And, you know, but I think number two there, that's tough for me, because I'm not a doctor, and I don't necessarily have a lot of details, but I would go – I don't know a lot about – Lattimore's is the one I know the least about, so I'm going to put that third, just because I because he moves so well physically, and you know, he still lit up the combine and everything. I'm gonna put that one third as least – or fourth, I guess, as least concerning for counting your gun cabinet as number one. But between Hooker and Allen, I put Hooker one, just because I think with Allen's injury, I've seen it described so many times as something that – a lot of players deal with that we just don't know about. And it's one of those things with Allen where he gets so analyzed in the draft community, and maybe an opposing agent or an opposing player wanted to get some dirt, or a team that isn't high on Allen or rather is high on Allen and wants him to drop, leaks that out there and says, hey, this guy's got an arthritic shoulder condition, when players have been drafted very high in the past, I would assume. I don't know extensive medical history, but it sounds like this is something that a lot of players have and deal with and go through their whole career, and no one really knows about it. And so just because it came out with Allen, it sits on your mind, and you start to feel like, well, even as many times as someone tells you it's minor and won't affect his career, you still think about it, and it still comes up in the evaluation over and over, and it can build up to be a bigger and better thing. Whereas Malik Hooker's injury is a known thing that he's had surgery on. He hasn't been able to compete, and he hasn't been able to run drills at the combine or his pro day. And you know, that's something that's a much more real and now concern than an arthritic shoulder condition that didn't cause Allen to miss time during his college career. So I go with Hooker, just because you never know what could happen from that. And Allen's, I think, is getting a little bit overblown.
All right. Thoughtful response. And this is the time of the show where I ask our guests, go ahead and promote stuff. What do you got going on?
Well, you know, you did a good job at the beginning of talking about Bears Hour Live. What Phil and I do every Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Time, we go live on the air. Although we're not going to be live on Easter Sunday. We're gonna take that one off. But beyond that, we'll be live every Sunday, 2 o'clock, to break down. We've been doing Bears draft stuff for the last month or so, and we're going to be going live the night of the draft and giving our analysis of the picks sort of after they happen. And then, of course, after the draft, we'll go through all the picks. And along with that, we've been doing a film room series on YouTube. We've got a YouTube channel that you can subscribe to. Of course, our live shows are podcasted on iTunes and Google Play and Podbean and all the podcast hosting service. But in our film room series, we've been looking at prospects. We did a Deshaun Watson versus Mitch Trubisky video where we take you into the play side by side to sort of show Watson play, show Trubisky play, show you what they can do and what they can't do, and sort of serve as a scouting report. We just did Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Kizer too, and we're doing a Forrest Lamp video this week to show why we think he should be able to play offensive tackle in the NFL, even though most people project him to guard. And of course, after the draft, we're going to go through each of the prospects that the Bears drafted. Assuming we haven't already gone through one of them, if they end up taking one of the guys we've done, we probably won't double dip on them, but we will be breaking down whoever they get and keeping this going throughout the offseason. It's a lot of fun, and we hope that you'll join us.
And I know I will, because I am a big fan of your work and what you and Phil are doing with your Enterprise Bears Hour Live. Truly enjoy it and look forward to it every week. The interview with Greg Gabriel It was sensational. It's up on bearsbarroom.com if you want to listen to it. In fact, I just looked at the numbers. We had 30 people listen to it on our website, and I know you've had hundreds more look at it on your website and at iTunes and so forth, all the various download options that you have. So congratulations on that, Lauren Cox, and thanks very much for being on Bears Barroom Radio. Okay, we've got another show coming at you this week. I will have a special guest whom I still need to book. Trust me, though, whoever I bring on the show will bring it, so it'll be a good show for you. And then next week, I'm hoping to have the full Barroom crew together for some fun, some laughs, and some talk about the draft, and we've got a couple of topics in mind. Then in the middle of next week, we will have a one-on-one show with Danny Scheinman. Danny has been providing BearsBarroom.com with some great in-depth scouting reports on some of the possibilities the Bears might have with their first-round draft choice. So we'll talk to Danny about those players, and he will also bring us a list of prospects for later rounds that he thinks will be great fits for the Chicago Bears. That's it. Please tell your friends, family, and foes about our show. Subscribe, send money, or just send your love. We'll take it. And remember, if you drink, don't drive, and always bear down.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. First day, you and me are thrifty, so go all you can eat. Fill up your bag and I fill up the plate. We talk for hours and hours about the sweet and the sour and how your family's doing okay. And leaving, getting a taxi, kissing the backseat, tell the driver make the radio play. And I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love.